Hej och välkomna till avsnitt 1191 av amerikanska nyhetsanalyser, Sveriges enda konservativa USA-podd med mig, Ronny Berggren. Den somaliskfödda kongresskvinnan Ilhan Omar valdes 2018 till kongresskvinna för Minnesotas femte kongressdistrikt. Ett gäng grävande journalister från Project Veritas har dock uppdagat hur Ilhan Omar har vunnit sina val genom välorganiserad ballot harvesting och klanröstning med metoder som inte kan betecknas som något annat än valfusk. Här ett klipp från Project Veritas.
James O'Keefe here in downtown Minneapolis at the scene of the crime. The person you're about to meet, Liban Mohammed, aka King Liban 1, boasts about the hundreds of absentee ballots in his car. This video is one of the first of its kind. A man self-incriminating himself, bragging about all the illegal ballot harvesting that he does.
Money is everything. Money is the key in this world.
Här intervjuar jag Matthew Turmand från Project Veritas om deras viktiga avslöjande. Varmt välkomna. Matthew Turmand, hello.
Hi, good to be with you, Ron.
You are from America and you're a part of the Veritas project. What is that project about?
So Project Veritas, I serve on the board and I work closely with the founder and chairman, James O'Keefe. He's a close friend of mine and we're comrades in arms, brothers in arms, fighting the battles for transparency and against corruption and to investigate the frauds in society in the public sector and the private sector. Obviously a heavy emphasis on the public sector because the media does not hold the public sector accountable, at least not the left, which is, you know, so institutionally oriented toward using the public sector for its own devices. So it's a investigative journalism nonprofit focused on rooting out fraud and corruption. And, our body of work is incredible. I mean, starting with James, when he was in college, he found his calling because he saw the duplicity in the ivory tower and he wanted to call that out. And I urge all your viewers and your listeners just to go to Project Veritas website and watch some of the early videos and watch the progression of investigations. It's really one of the great bodies of work in the modern era. There was this concept of the muckrakers in the late part of the 19th and early part of the 20th century when there was capital was abusing labor, and there were so many different things to investigate in society. The poverty, Upton Sinclair in the jungle described the food production and how hygiene was an issue, and that ushered in the FDA and standards. Ida Tarbell with some of the institutions, Ida B. Wells, Nellie Bly was famous for going undercover to expose the abuse of mental patients in the 19th century insane asylums. Jacob Riis with the tenements on the Lower East Side and the poverty in the immigrant neighborhoods. So these were the old school investigative shoe leather journalists who weren't afraid to go undercover to expose for Americans to see the abuses going on in society. And so it was called the muckraking age. And James is a modern day muckraker, and Project Veritas is built with that mentality in mind to really go where, you know, those who are captured by the institutions and the elites and the established forces won't go, they won't touch, they won't call out. We do. And as you can see with our latest work, we're going into an area that a lot of us know exists, but the mainstream media has abrogated their responsibility. They'd rather cover for the frauds, cover it up and utilize it for their own political agenda and their own ends. And that we cannot abide by. So we go out and we do the heavy lifting.
Yeah. What's your own personal role in Veritas Project?
So I'm a board member, but I work very closely with James and making a lot of the decisions that help move the organization forward. I've got a fiduciary responsibility, so I have to sign off and put my good name onto the organization, which I'm proud to do. I've never felt even a moment of regret on that, even though sometimes it makes you a target because we're going after very, very high level people and forces and institutions. So James and I are cut from the same cloth, which is why, you know, I'm such an active board member and help him in the sort of like day-to-day and week-to-week and the investigative and the messaging, communicating, and like even the stuff we're talking about now. So we work great together. We've got a great team. We've got great management. We've got great field operations. And we've got, of course, undercover journalists. And it's not their job to be front and center. It's their job to go in like one of our great stars did in Minnesota and infiltrate, this time via whistleblowers and insiders who helped bring us in. But we did a lot of work and I've done a lot of work in the past, and we've talked about it, you and I, understanding Minnesota politics, because it's so interesting. And of course, to the Swedes and the Scandinavians, Minnesota is one of the capitals of the American Scandinavian diaspora. So I think a lot of your viewers are familiar with Minnesota, maybe more than some other states, because they probably have relatives over the generations who have relocated into that part of the country, the upper Midwest.
Yeah, but Minnesota today is, you know, you have a lot of Somali immigrants in Minnesota, and your latest, your latest video is about that community and your representative, Ilhan Omar. She's a Somali-born American congresswoman. She was elected in 2018. And, you know, your partner, James, he has discovered that there are a lot of ballot harvesting in her district. And that is basically cheating. Can you explain what you discovered and, you know, the whole story in
Sure. So we believe ballot harvesting is going on everywhere. In the 2018 midterm elections, we saw it really brazenly occur in California, where they deregulated these voter regulations so that people could actually go and deliver ballots that don't belong to them to the voting precincts. And of course, that opens it up for fraud. And in California, what we saw was in this midterms, they were able to take a lot of seats that had been held by Republicans for generations, like in Orange County, and they flipped them to Democrat. And there were all sorts of tailwinds they had. The Democrats did turn out in 2018 to rebuke Trump, but the math didn't really work. And we could tell, and everyone can on the right, that something shady went on. Minnesota was always a famous example because this was a progressive place, one of the progressive capitals. The upper Midwest, Wisconsin, Minnesota were sort of the birthplace of American progressivism. And Minnesota was so progressive that when Ronald Reagan won in 1984 against Walter Mondale, he won every single state in the country except Minnesota. Minnesota was where his opponent, Walter Mondale, was from. That was the one state he did not win. So it's been a very tried and true progressive bastion for a long, long time with a Democrat party that's a little bit different than the Democrat party in other states. It's called the Democrat Farmer Labor Party because it's really started out as an agrarian sort of unionist party because it is a breadbasket. There's huge wheat and beet farming. There's also iron ore. So there's a lot of working class industries that revolve around agriculture and mining. And so DFL was built to sort of tap into that. It was that sort of state chapter of the Democrat Party. And it never joined up formally in the same way and merged with the Democrat Party as every other state did. It maintained this DFL. And it's been a very effective machine in the state to control it. So you haven't had Republicans in Minnesota very often. It's in some districts, it's shifted a little bit, but certainly in the big city, the anchor of the population in the state is in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, the biggest city, and its sister city, St. Paul, which is the state capital, and it's one metropolitan area. And so there's a huge machine in those cities, in Hennepin County, which is the county that Minnesota, Minneapolis is in. The county operates the voting. So Hennepin County, where Minneapolis, the biggest city is, would oversees the voting. And what we saw was that some of the things going on there, it became pretty evident, at least, you know, just analysts like myself, that the machine was taking control of the voting process. There's a very famous case you and I have talked about in 2008 with Norm Coleman, a Republican, who won outright on election night versus Al Franken, the former Saturday Night Live comedian and actor who was a hard left New Yorker but from Minnesota. And he went back, he ran for the Senate. Norm Coleman beat him on the night of the election. And then what happened was you had a Democrat party that filed petitions with the Democrat state court, and the court held up declaring the election over. And so for weeks, they would continue to find ballots. Absentee ballots would just materialize. And then, you know, just the margin that Coleman had won was several thousand votes. And they just kept finding a few hundred here, a few thousand here. And then the second they got over the vote count that would give Franken the win, then the court deemed it, okay, election's over. And he took the Senate seat. And he was a pretty high profile senator for three terms. Into his third term, he had to resign because of some Me Too activity when there were some photos that surfaced of him sort of making jokes with women in an offensive way. And some other senators who wanted to tap into the popularity of the Me Too movement pushed for his ouster, and so he resigned. And at the same time, concurrently, Ilhan Omar was coming into power in the House, and she was this cause celeb for the American left, because here you have this quote-unquote American success story, refugee, Somali refugee, but of course she is hard left and very much in the Islamic political milieu, which is a little bit different than other parts of the democratic complex, though they have converged in recent years. When you look at the squad like Rashida Tlaib in Michigan, in a heavily Palestinian and Muslim area where she gets her votes. And we do believe that there's all sorts of these kind of frauds using these immigrant communities to ballot harvest. So to ballot harvest is to go in and to take the ballots from, say, older people who you can say, and a lot of them are new to the country. They're Somali, they're coming from a military dictatorship, so they don't understand how, you know, the free election system works. So these Somalis who are working for Omar would go to the projects, which is one of the ones that we went to expose this. This was Horned Towers in Minneapolis, and they would just say, oh no, give your ballot to us. You're going to sign this, you're going to get the ballot. They took pictures of the license and social security cards, your identifications, so you can apply for the ballot. And they would take control of the individual process of voting on behalf of these people, and they'd cast their votes for Omar. They'd even say, and it's illegal, you're not allowed to tell someone who they're vote for if you're ballot harvesting. There are legal mechanisms for ballot harvesting. In Minneapolis, there was a dispensation where you could harvest 3 votes. But in the video that we exposed with Liban Muhammad, who obviously is not that smart a guy because he was out there documenting on social media videos on Snapchat, thinking they disappear, bragging about all the ballots he was harvesting, looking in, look at my car, look at my dashboard, look at my car seat. I have hundreds of ballots and it's all for Omar or Omar's clan. They use the word clan, which is very fitting. And in this case, what we believe happened was that there was this city council, Ward 6, that is the sort of heart of the Somali and East African community. And it was somebody in her clan, Jamal Osman, who won the race, though he was up against another Somali, AJ Awed, who features in the video heavily because we spoke to him and we put forward his conversation where he called out the corruption. He didn't think that he lost, honestly. And he got, I think, 42% of the vote. So all they had to do for that kind of race is to harvest maybe several hundred, maybe several thousand, but some sort of threshold that was eminently doable. And so you see that they're doing it. They admit that they're doing it with the seniors. They go door to door. They fill out the ballot application forms. They get them. We also showed that in Hennepin County, that you can come in and say you just moved in and say, oh, well, I don't have my new ID yet. And then you have one of your friends vouch for you. And that's enough for them to release the ballot and say, okay, you're a resident and you vote this way. One of the concerning things about this video we exposed is when our undercover journalist went to the Hennepin County voter office and he said, well, how does this vouch process work? And they said, and he said, well, they all live. You've got 8 people or so living in the small house. There's no way. They didn't care. They had no interest in investigating it because they're all part of the same machine political complex on the left. So it's see no evil, hear no evil, get as many votes as we can, however we can. And, you know, we maintain that we believe there was cash transactions because we had insiders and whistleblowers telling us that with the old people, a lot of them give them up. The young people, they sell their ballots. That is very illegal. You cannot sell your ballot to somebody to cast on your behalf. That is not legal.
For cash.
And, you know, I cannot confirm nor deny, but we might have video coming out that further shows and demonstrates what this looks like. And what we've already seen is ugly, but I can tell you it will always get uglier. When you scratch the surface on corrupt, fraudulent complexes like this, it always gets uglier. And that's what we have seen in the first round of videos, and we have more coming. We have more coming tonight and tomorrow and the next day, hopefully. We're getting more content because this is a rich story. We expect there'll be more whistleblowers who will come out to us to give us information because there's a lot of good, honest people among the immigrant community who came to America because they believe in America, because they believe that it's a place you can operate a small business or you could drive an Uber or a cab, and you can actually raise your children by working a job on the sweat of your brow, which is the American dream, that you can give your kids a better life than you had. And when you have a complex that undermines the most elemental system of the framework, which is voting, the transfer of power to those who would represent your interests most openly and transparently and honestly, and then you see this going on, you know, one of the women on this video, she says, they don't give a shit about the Somalis. They're just using us for power and money. And it's another insider whistleblower saying, you know, there's a bargain between the progressive DFL, Democrat Farmer Labor Party, and the Somali community. See no evil, hear no evil. Just get the votes, maintain the power. And that is illegal and dishonest, and we're going to expose it. We started exposing it. It's getting huge traction. You see the Twitter activity. Trump is tweeting about it, and we expect there's going to be a lot of follow-through on this.
Yeah. Is this problem just, you know, related to Ilhan Omar, or is it like bigger?
No. It's much bigger. We have no doubt it's much bigger. We know this has been going on. Look, there's been voter fraud instances that are famous in American history in the 60s. When John F. Kennedy won, there was the famous Chicago dead vote that his father, who's a very powerful operative, Joe Kennedy, he organized with his cronies in Chicago, people to vote who were already dead, but they weren't purged off the voter rolls, but they cast votes for JFK. So, voter fraud has been going on for ages in different ways. The new way that we recognize is ballot harvesting, which the Democrat Party and the Democrat Farmer Labor Party in Minnesota and the progressive activist organizations, when they do what they call voter registration, they're really trying to do voter harvesting. They're trying to get as many ballots under their control as they can. And that has certainly breaches the mission of the law, which is to, okay, if you're old and you can't get to the voter place, you can give your vote, your ballot filled out to somebody else to deliver. But historically, that was a 3-ballot maximum. And obviously, based on the video, we prove that they're doing that well in excess of what the law allows. And we do think that's going on everywhere. But, Ilhan Omar, we knew there was a corrupt machine along ethnic lines among this immigrant community. And that was something that was almost common knowledge, but nobody had the proof. And the Democrat media, as Trump calls them rightfully, they're busy trying to cover it up. They're not looking to expose it. The media's job as the historical fourth estate is to call these things out, is to investigate fraud and corruption for the good of society, is to expose these things. And they've been abrogating their responsibility on this, which is why we exist, which is why we have something to do. So we saw a case like this. We had good intel that this was going on, and we infiltrated the community with help of whistleblowers and those who were willing to talk to us. Some knowing that we were investigating, some just in passing, because we do undercover journalism. We do have hidden cameras and hidden microphones, and we do film, and we do that within compliance of the American law. The American law works such that 39 states, you have one-way consent, including Minnesota, where only one person that's party to a conversation has to consent for a conversation to be made public or to be recorded. Massachusetts used to be a two-way consent, where Illinois is two-way consent. Oregon has got some two-way consent qualities. Maryland, a lot of more corrupt states have two-way consent where both parties have to sign off for a recording to be made public. Those are states that obviously are tougher for us to operate in, so we operate in the states that the law allows us to. But Massachusetts was two-way consent, and we filed a court brief, and we actually are in the process of changing the law. We've had the first step with recording law enforcement that's been made legal where previously it was not. So we're going to fight more of these cases for the good of the legal system. To make it more open and transparent and adhere to a better standard. So we will continue to do that. Minnesota's a state we could operate in. We saw what was going on. We could sense what was going on, and we infiltrated and we recorded. And the video is very powerful. I mean, this piece of documentary investigative journalism is cinema verite. You don't have to trust us. Trust Liban Mohammed when he's bragging about how many votes he has and he's holding up. And he says, at 6 a.m. and I'm hustling, and then it's 2 a.m. and I'm hustling. And you see all these votes in his car, and he holds up a stack this thick, which is a few hundred ballots. Don't trust us. The left is going to say, oh, these guys lie. They're evil conservative right wingers. Okay, fine. Whatever. Don't trust us. The video, the moving lips and speaking voice of the miscreants and the perpetrators of these crimes is giving you your proof, is giving your evidence. And that's why we believe we're going to get a federal intervention here. We're going to get investigations from the feds. And I think there's going to be some serious hell to pay. I think there's going to be some jail sentences. I think they should all be lawyering up. And I think that if Ilhan Omar, it can be proven that she knew about this, I think she'll be forced to resign and may even have legal culpability. Because when it's Ali Essigeni, who factors in this video, this is her deputy director, chief of staff in her district campaign or in her district congressional office. So when you're a congressman or a woman, you have an office in D.C. and you have an office in your district. And Ali Genny was the deputy head of the district office. During the campaign, he was the outreach director and the organizer. So he would do the outreach to the people on the ground, and he would organize the campaigning strategy. So this was not a foot soldier. This was the guy leading the strategy. So if this was her person, this is somebody who's very high up. So we would find it very hard to believe and stomach that she would know nothing about this. She'll obviously claim she didn't. As the proof right now, they're in total denial and say nothing to see here, move along. But that's not going to fly. Yes, they'll have Newsweek and some of the lefty news organizations cover for them. But, we'll break through, and we are. As much as Twitter wants to throttle us, it's naturally organically breaking through because it's so brazen and so offensive that the law could be broken in this sort of direct, transparent way.
Yeah, you're exposing voter fraud, but how much do you think this will be, you know, exposed in, you know, in the big media, in national media? Do you think Donald Trump will talk about it in the debates or something?
Yes, yes, we do think he will. I think, you know, he has mentioned Omar already in his recent rallies. He really does not like her for good reason. She's everything. She's aligned with every force he stands against, from defund the police to bail out all the criminals and allow them to continue to loot and riot and arson and burn down the cities. You know, the far left is, and this is why Trump won, is because a lot of the historical Democrats, it was a working class populist party, the Union Rust Belt Democrats of FDR. Well, that party left them. It's now the party of Elizabeth Warren and Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib. They're more concerned with transgender bathrooms and going to war with Israel over, you know, Palestinian rights, which there's a debate to be had, but they're so knee jerk on it. And Israel's still an American ally. They want to undermine that alliance. And Israel is obviously a great democracy in the Middle East relative to theocracies all around it. So it makes sense that we have a great alliance with Israel. And where, you know, Saudi Arabia, historically, it's been a mixed relationship. Iran has been horrible since 1979. And they kicked out the American-backed Shah. And it's been a very, very ugly, despotic, violent theocracy that is now at war with many other factions within the Middle East, which is actually creating an opening for Trump to make peace with those like he has with the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, and to settle some of these multi-generational internecine wars and war and battles of ideas between the Muslim states and Israel. Well, now they're coming together because of a shared worry about Iran, who is willing to go to war with everyone around them. So Ilhan Omar standing on, aligned with these forces and ideologies that are so at odds with American ideals and America, the American society, as well as the American geopolitical considerations, Trump is no fan. And he's already been talking about her. In Florida, he did a rally and he talked about her, about how horrible she was and how un-American, how she should go back to where she came from if she hates America this much. And of course, the media says, oh, that's racist. I don't think it's racist. If she was pro-America, it wouldn't matter what her race was. It has nothing to do with the race. It has to do with ideology. She hates America. That's clear in her rhetoric and her actions and what she stands for. So he mentions this in his rallies, and he actually starts mentioning something about undercovers, and that we realized was an allusion to the stuff we're doing. So that was pretty gratifying. And I don't doubt, with the amount of coverage this is getting, that this is going to break through. He will mention in the debates. I think the DOJ under Barr is going to investigate. This is not the end of the story. This is the beginning of the story. I remember in 2016, when the media was scared, even the media that would have been sympathetic to breaking these stories, either because they were real media or because they were right of center, they were very scared Hillary was going to win. And we got spiked on a lot of the stories. They wouldn't run our major smoking gun with the Democrat Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky's husband, Bob Creamer. He was an Obama-tied community activist who was deeply involved in voter fraud. We exposed voter fraud there. He had one operation underneath his sort of umbrella of groups that called Democracy Partners. That was a guy named Scott Fogel, who talked about busing people into Wisconsin who weren't from Wisconsin to vote, to swing Wisconsin. So, you know, and he said something I'm paraphrasing, we've been bussing them in long before you've been around, we're bussing them in long after you're gone, something like this. So, I mean, they know they're creating voter fraud, they're engaged in voter fraud. So it's not new. So voter fraud's been a big issue for us because the media left won't cover it. They cover it up. They lie about it. They attack the messenger. They attack us and say, you can't trust O'Keefe and Project Veritas. So that's disingenuous, but we're going to break through because the American people aren't stupid. And they know, you know, it's kind of like my father coming from communist Poland, used to write about the Soviets saying, oh, well, it was a banner crop year. You know, the economy's doing great. Yields in agriculture are high. We have more food than we know what to do with. Yet everybody was starving to death. So do you believe your hungry belly? Do you believe your lying eyes? You know, when you're confronted with incontrovertible evidence and facts, you make decisions with those data points. American people are not stupid. Certainly the leftists, hard left, they're either stupid or they're lying, cheating, and engaged in fraud. But the silent majority of people who don't view themselves as hard left or hard right, they know when they're being lied to. And this is a perfect example therein.
Yeah, one final question then. Is this problem possible to solve only with one party? Donald Trump obviously have the guts to take them on, and the Republican Party too, but you know, the Democrats are silent. Can you solve this problem with only one party?
As Barack Obama said, elections have consequences. Elections matter. When he jammed through Obamacare, the PPACA, the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, he said to Eric Cantor, the then Speaker, the Republican Speaker of the House, when they were disagreeing on the structures of this major groundbreaking legislation that would reorder 20% of the American economy and kick people off some of their medical plans and their doctors, and they were being lied to. And he said, elections have consequences. Well, Donald Trump won, and elections have consequences. We have the executive branch, we have the Department of Justice, albeit there's many district offices in the Department of Justice, like the Southern District of New York, that are lawless, part of the leftist institutional deep state, and they're busy going to war with Trump and going to war with Bannon and going to war with people based on ideology, not based on law breaking, and they'll look right past the Clinton Foundation, which was in their jurisdiction. So yes, there are pockets of still those forces that we're going to have trouble with, but we do have a huge mandate from the American people. I expect that mandate's going to grow in coming weeks with the new election, and elections have consequences. So we're going to do what we can to aid the Republicans in power or whoever's in power. If they are reformers looking to go after the frauds, we're going to do what we can to give them the evidence and the context they need to do their jobs better.
Yeah. Okay. Matthew Turman, thank you a lot for taking time.
Oh, no, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you so much. And, you know, I love the Swedish Dems, and I love that that the Swedish right is gaining in Sweden in the polls, because it's the same thing. When you have no-go zones and rape gangs, the people on the ground with daughters know it. Even if the cloistered parliamentary elite, both in Stockholm and in Brussels, are willing to ignore it because they've got chauffeurs and armed guards and they live in gated communities, the people on the ground know it. And so, you know, I've always stood with the Swedish Dems, and I've got great friends. We have great mutual friends with them. And I root on, you know, Jimmy and Matthias and Tobias and your whole crew of great young parliamentarians and thinkers, because the culture war we are involved in is absolutely necessary to fight to save Western civilization. And the Swedish Dems are as good as any party in Europe doing so. So my exposed CNN hat is off to you.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Det var avsnitt 1191 av amerikanska nyhetsanalyser, Sveriges enda konservativa USA-podd som finns för att ge det perspektiv på USA som svensk media inte ger. Tack för att ni har lyssnat, vi hörs snart igen.